Live in simultaneous broadcast from a hidden cornfield in Wisconsin and some time-forgotten holy of holies in the Theban Mountains of Luxor, Egypt. Intrepid Radio with Scotty Roberts and Dr. John Ward.
Needless to say, the beast was stunned. A whip crack went his rumpet tail, and the beast was done. He asked us, "Be you angels?" And we said, "Nay, we are but men." Rock
on. And here it is, another Sunday night, folks. This is Scotty Roberts, and my cohort, Dr. John Ward, is somewhere over there in Sweden. And you're hearing weird sounds just like me, but that's because it's just me running the board tonight. That's an oddity. John, are you over there?
Well,
I don't hear John. He's over there somewhere. He might have his mic muted yet. This is the Intrepid Radio broadcast. We are operating without our engineer, producer, Rocky Stucci. And so you're going to have just me and John and some very interesting technical glitches probably going on. John, you there?
I'm always
here. I don't hear John for some reason. I'm not catching him, so I'm going to talk just a little bit while we figure this out. I'm going to talk and also engineer the board. You're going to see some fantastic feats of technical whatever. Tonight, we're going to have a guest on in the second half hour, and it's going to be very interesting because we're dealing with a topic that John and I don't normally deal with, and that is the ancient alien topic. I think I have John there. At least I hear some sounds back there.
Well, there's me. I'm always
there. You are.
I'd rather talk about what's happening in the world, especially with regards gun law. All Americans, including Scotty Roberts, should all have their guns taken away from them and instead give them feather dusters. And so you could tickle each other to death, but you can't shoot each other. And that includes the army, and then includes the police as well. But the police, they got an extra weapon. They have dusters as well, the fabric kind, which will go with their feather dusters. So I think that would be the best thing. But you can come back in now, Scott, because I'm bored now with this.
Please. Oh, all right. Well, I see you've exhausted the topic for tonight.
I've exhausted the topic of gun law. And, I mean, really, seriously, I mean, you guys, you always get so flustered about your gun laws, don't you, and your First Amendments and so forth, and your Constitution.
Well, that's only because it's a constitutional right. And every time there is some kind of – and now listen to the way I say this, too. Every time there is some kind of disaster or atrocity or mass murder, some things like that that happen that involves somebody using guns, we go through the same political rhetoric. And the gun control laws are nothing more than a political football. I think there are some people that honestly believe there should be guns, honestly believe there shouldn't be guns. And every time you see something like what happened with the church in South Carolina this last Sunday, you will see the hue and cry, especially from those who are most invested in it politically. You don't see those who support gun control laws up there saying, "We've really got to use this now to emphasize why you all need to pack heat." They don't do that. But you will see the other side of that political football. Every time there's something, we feel so bad about these people who've been killed, and we want to mourn them today. We mourn along with them. And now we've had so much of this go on in our country. This is a time to renew the debate about how these criminals access these kinds of weapons. And immediately it goes from the leader of the country getting up to mourn the situation and jumping within 30 seconds into the politics of the matter. We've got to do something about this. We've got to take the guns away. We've got to make them less available. We've got to do something to prevent this from happening. And when in the reality, and folks, I don't want to sound crass or cold-hearted about this, and so how do you say something like this without making people think you're not sensitive at all to what the loss of life is all about?
But when
it is irrelevant. It is irrelevant.
There is no way around this. You can be callous about the situation,
sure,
but at the same time you can be sympathetic to the family's loss.
Absolutely,
and atrocity that took place. The gentleman in question, Stormroof, whatever his stupid name was a misguided fellow, mentally unstable. He had access to a gun. and he took the 9 innocent lives. You can be sympathetic to that, but at the same time, to have for your president to then declare war on the first constitution, so to speak, and create this new, another debate on the gun laws of America, that's his job.
The issue that I wanted to speak about to that, before we go further on your side of that, I was going to say out of 317 million people who live in the United States, that's as of the status that we know by the U.S. Census Bureau from last year, 317 million people, how many people have been gunned down and killed in these mass shootings in the last 10 years? But when you start looking at these, you've got 8 people here, 12 people there, 9 people in the most recent. And I can't remember what the highest number was. I want to say it didn't reach into the 20s. But when you add all of those up, and this is where people might say, wow, I can't believe you just said that. And that's so cold and crass. But when you look at the number of people killed in these kinds of incidences compared to the population, you've got a minuscule number of people dying at the hands of some terrorist who is homegrown, who has his hands on a weapon, or some idiot, or some person who is mentally ill getting their hands on a gun. And then these killings take place. Yet, we're saying this is a huge problem in the United States, and something's got to be done. Yes, something does have to be done, but here's also the question that has to be asked. Will you always be able to prevent bad things from happening, no matter how many laws you have? And the bottom line question is, are you willing as United States citizens to say, we will do away with the Second Amendment, or we will take away the citizenry's right to own a weapon? Will we take that away from the good people who are responsible and willing to do it the right way and willing to abide by the law, because there have been a handful of people that have misused that law in these kinds of instances? So now somebody's going to come up and say, well, what about all the gun shootings that take place at home? What about all the kids that find dad's loaded gun and they blow their own head off or the face of their sister or brother? That happens, yes. If you start adding all those numbers together, there are lots of accidents with guns. But now, I do not have the statistics in front of me, but I have heard the statistics that people dying in car wrecks is far higher than people dying by accidental gunshots.
This does raise questions, fundamental questions, with regards to your laws and the gun laws in whole. And while I advocate gun ownership, I also at the same time advocate gun safety, which is paramount.
Absolutely.
I believe that you do have some rather absurd laws when it comes to your guns. To have a permit to conceal a weapon and carry it in general public, I think is probably one of the most absurd permits that you could possibly get. I couldn't see the purpose of it, unless you are some maniac or if you're a bodyguard or a security official. But then again, you shouldn't, unless you are actually tied to either the military or the armed forces or the police, or any other kind of emergency department, which facilitates or requires or necessitates the need to carry a firearm, then of course, then that's okay. But for a general person to walk into Walmart wearing a concealed weapon, I think is ludicrous. It's beyond ludicrous. There's no need for it. But then, on the upside of that, when you look at the news and you look at the way in which life pans out in America, the gun crime, crime in its essence, is violent in America compared to other countries. And so therefore, I suppose there's your necessity, protection, self-protection, the right to arm oneself and the right to protect oneself, the right to protect one's property, the right to shoot somebody on your property if they are causing you violence or causing you physical harm or physical behavior, etc. There were so many connotations here, and this is where the lawmakers need to do their job. And I think the debate should go on, But it should go on, and it should include people like, of course, the NRA and gun owners in general, and allow it to take its natural progression, really.
This is a topic that we could spend hours and hours and hours talking on, which we're not going to do tonight, obviously. But this is something that's at the forefront of my mind because in the political front this week, and yeah, folks, we do talk politics here sometimes on Intrepid Radio, even though we talk things like ancient aliens and real archaeology and all of that other kind of stuff, it needs to be brought up because I was very taken aback when the president came on and was talking about gun control laws. I got to tell you, it was not even a half a minute into his condolences for the people who lost their lives there. And once again, you've got, I think this is crass politics, is what that is.
I think he's doing his job.
See, I don't give him that caveat. I say, wait till the next day. Wait till the smoke is cleared before you start going political. It would be like, God forbid, in a nasty hypothetical, John Ward, you know, you lose your family in a boat sinking or something like that. And I get on and I say, I am so sorry for my brother's loss of his wife and his child. And today, we've really got to start talking about life jacket safety and laws to prevent these boats from sinking. To me, that is a crass politicizing of a condolence.
You're not the leader of the free nation.
No, I'm not. But the leader of the free nation should be able to think better than that.
Well, yes, but he's also meant to be able to say things as knee-jerk reactions. And I think he said a knee-jerk reaction. And I think it was in a timely manner. He was sympathetic to the event and then made his statement with regards gun control. And as a liberal, I'm sure that's where he came from. And we should respect that of him because he is the president of the United States of America.
Okay, thank you.
God bless Obama.
Thank you. God save the Queen.
Of course.
Of course.
Jealousy is such an ugly thing.
It is. Did you see this article about ISIS planting landmines around Palmyra?
Yes. I'm Maria put it in. It made her feel sick. It really just sickens you to the bone that they would do such a thing. You're lost for words, really, aren't you?
Now, is this in an attempt to keep people out or to cause future damage, or is it an attempt to blow up the entire place?
They said that it's to prevent the continued onslaught of the Syrian army.
Because they're going to go running right through the old ruins, right?
Exactly. I think it's a preventive gesture. I think they're going to hold Palmyra to ransom, for want of a better word, right, that if the Syrian army advances on them, they will literally just blow up Palmyra. But, you know, who knows what's behind these brains? I was going to say brains. There's no brains there. What's behind these brain cells that allow them to operate, these backpackers? I have got no idea. What one goat herder says to another with a landmine in Palmyra? Really, I have no idea. I just hope that one of them falls on their own landmine.
If they hold it ransom and they eventually leave the place, then they're not going to go, okay, and we'll clear all those landmines for you now because we've got them all mapped out. No, it's going to be see ya, it's going to be taken over.
Yeah, so it's going to take years to clear up, years. And it's another one of these gestures by ISIS that just beggars belief. Move on, because it makes me angry. I don't want to.
Oh, it makes me angry too.
I want to talk about ancient aliens.
What do you got that doesn't make you angry tonight, John?
Well, this morning, it's a beautiful morning, actually. It's a beautiful morning. We've just had midsummer over here in Sweden, where the Swedes all get drunk, eat mackerel and other weird fishes in weird different sources and smorgasbords and so forth, and then leap around like frogs, singing the frog song while leaping around in circles around a maypole. All very paganistic. The getting drunk part of it, thankfully, teetotal, didn't have to partake in that one. Did have a little bit of mackerel on a boiled egg. Wasn't too keen on that, must admit. It was more like eating a piece of sausage.
Oh, sorry. Was I yawning or sighing there? I'm sorry. Go ahead, John.
You're so rude. I'm sharing with you a cultural identity.
You can't talk about the way the current president addresses gun control law during a condolence speech because he's appeasing his political followers and his trying to establish his own legacy and his mindset, and yet you've moved us into talking about Lutefisk. Of course, I'm not the leader of the country, so I wouldn't have anything negative to say about Lutefisk.
I'm sorry, but I thought it was a lighter subject to talk about. You get so heated and under the collar about gun control and Obama.
I do.
I think you need to send Obama a big hug and get over him. He's your president. End the story.
I love him,
but he is the elected official.
Well, yes, he is. Does that mean, now, I do respect the office, but does that mean I have to respect his policies and his philosophies?
Well, no, you don't have to, but you have to acknowledge them. You have to give him respect. It's like, I don't agree with everything that our prime minister does, but I respect his office, and I respect the fact that the people put him there. And so, therefore, if the people put him there, then I'm sure he's going to do a damn good job. Look at Tony Blair.
Okay.
A great man. Nothing that a good paper bag over his head and a very heavy brick tied around his neck and thrown into a river wouldn't do any harm to him. But, nice man. Did a good job. Well done, Tony. Good work on Iraq.
So what else is on your mind tonight, John?
Oh, I don't know. It's been one of those weeks, hasn't it? It really has.
There was a
funny thing. We did the Situation Room on Thursday with Rocky, and we had a wonderful conversation and debate about world politics and the world banking system and how that's all leading up to and gearing
up.
Yes,
we did.
And we got kind of conspiratorial about it, I must admit. I brought in facets of the hidden hand and so forth. But what made me laugh was Rocky's post yesterday from Alex Jones and his globalists.
Oh, yes.
I thought it was, I don't know if you took the time to watch that 10-minute video of Alex Jones screaming down a microphone at you. The guy,
I didn't see this particular one, but I've seen plenty of Alex Jones lately.
So paranoid, that man.
Do you think with good cause?
Well, yes. Because it was quite funny because he used exactly near enough word for word what we had talked about in the Situation.
That's right, that's right. Yes.
He even used all the same news articles, research material. It was quite funny.
We're secretly working for Infowars.com.
Well, I think he's listening to our show and stealing our material.
That must be it.
I think because he's run out of material. He's been going far too long now. Unless it's to do with the Bilderbergs or anything of that nature, then he's lost, really. So I think he's just listing out for other shows and pinching their material. But I thought that was quite funny. But all seriousness and all joking aside, I think there is this week, there's so much going on at the moment that it really does. And I said this to you last night. We had a brief conversation last night before I turned in for my 3 hour sleep before waking up at 3 a.m. this morning.
Oh, spot on.
I managed to get 2.5 hours sleep. And you're welcome, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
And as we're saying, 15 years ago, I had that kind of, you know, that trepidation that there was something afoot. And it was a series of synchronistic coincidences and events that took place in my life that I decided to kind of leave the matrix, for want of a better word, and seek my dream, which was in Egypt. And that continued. And then, you know, as life progressed, those concerns, those worries, those feelings, etc., 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 that I had with regards the world calamity, etc., and the consequences of such, kind of went to the wayside, and life was rosy. And it's only been the past couple of months, I suppose, if I'm honest, that they've kind of resurfaced. And that's only due to the amount of the events that are taking place on a global scale. And it does make you sit back and take stock of what is actually happening. And I know a lot of our listeners, of our audience that listen to us, and we talk about ISIS quite a lot. We talk about the current affairs, and we don't usually get too deep. But when you start to join the dots, it starts to look a little bit scary, I must admit. I mean, Russia, its build-up, but more importantly, NATO's build-up on the borders with Russia. That's even more scary. What's happening in the Ukraine, or what should I say is what is not being told that is happening in the Ukraine. The Middle East, the continued Middle East problem, the continued problems in Northern Africa, the continued problems with migration, the continued problems with the economic crisis within Europe, especially with Greece at the moment, which is hot on the news. But it's just one thing after the other. And one then has to start asking the question, is this something really going on that we're not fully aware of? You know, you look at Jade Helm, and again, I refer to other articles that are bounding around at the moment, conspiratorial, that Jade Helm has more of a martial law, the ability to deploy troops onto the streets of America in case of a civil unrest or civil threat from within your own borders, is becoming more and more realistic. And again, we were talking about this only last night, Scotty, you know, where we were talking about the threat from within, homegrown terrorism, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and what we're looking at with regards to migration in Europe and how many are hidden within the numbers of those migrants. And there was a very good article actually on that yesterday that came out through the BBC, which you'll be able to find online, about the hidden hidden terrorists, for want of a better word, basically, within the numbers of migrants that are hidden the shores of Italy and Spain from the Mediterranean, and how they're infiltrating various facets of the European society as they migrate across Europe. And so there's a lot going on that one really has to take closer attention to. Start doing your research, start looking, start preparing. Prepare, and I'm not talking about being a prepper and so forth, but prepare oneself. Be aware of your surroundings. Be aware of your local facilities and infrastructure. Know where certain things are in case of an emergency. There was a very quick post yesterday where a few friends were bounding backwards and forwards, and they were talking about buying gold and silver. And I happened to mention that. I said, well, you know, gold and silver is all very good, but it's not going to put bread on the table, and it's not going to get you fresh water, and it's not going to give you shelter. These are basic necessities that we all need to know, and we should know. And I think the current situation in the world is one should be better prepared for the unknown rather than preparing for other things with regards to financial assets and commodities and so forth. Which leads me to another thing. I mean, it was very interesting that I was mentioning to you that I was privy to information about the financial crash that's supposedly coming towards the end of this year. And what made me laugh, and I burst out laughing, and even Maria burst out laughing, was when Alex Jones turned around within the first minute of his segment and said, well, he knows, it's the financial crash, and it's coming in October of this year.
Yeah.
And I thought, the guy has literally listened to the Situation Room and taken our narrative word for word and actually gone on air with it. It was quite funny, really. But what's your take on things, Scotty? I mean, do you feel concerned? Do you feel worried? Do you feel as if you're prepared enough?
Well, that's a big question. You know, do we feel that we're prepared? Because it doesn't matter how prepared you think you might be. And you and I talked about this today earlier. Not that we keep saying that, folks. That's because John and I talk an awful lot. This thing of being prepared for something like this, I don't think you ever really can be. Somebody is going to say, buy gold, buy silver, and have these in your vault in case there is what? A breakdown in the world's economic system. Because gold and silver throughout the ages have never lost their value. This is something that is constantly put forward in the ads for the companies that sell gold and silver. However, the problem is if you have a complete economic breakdown, what's going to happen to society? altogether, to our civilization altogether? Is government still going to operate if nobody's there to do it? If there's no money to run the government, what happens? Are we thrown into anarchy? And if we're thrown into anarchy, questions of things that we've covered on this show in the last couple of weeks, are you going to face anarchy for defending and protecting yourselves, feeding yourselves? There is no government in place and so on. So yeah, that's a loaded question for the last 30 seconds before our break.
Within that 30 seconds, let me just share with you my dream that I woke up from this morning. Well, this evening, this morning. It's a very 30-second job. I was walking across a field, being marched across a field. There was a row of gallows with young men being hung. And then I was walked past these pits that were being bulldozed, which were filled with bodies of young men and women and children that had been shot in the back of the head. And I was surrounded by ISIS flags. And this was the countryside surroundings. I just want to share that with you.
Well, that was pleasant. And on that note, folks, we've got to go out to break. May John's dream lull you into a place of comfort and peace, and looking forward to our guest coming on after the bottom of the hour here. So, John, thank you for that.
You're welcome. I thought I'd share these little insights into my world.
Oh, what is it? A dream is a wish your heart makes? Oh, well, that has to be a nightmare.
It could have been a prophecy.
It might have been. Folks, we're going to be right back. You stay tuned. We'll be back very shortly with our guest, Michael J.S. Carter. He is our guest tonight. We're going to be talking about ancient aliens from a very different angle. So you stay tuned. You're listening to the Intrepid Radio program right here on IPBN, Alternative Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
It's a lot like riding a two-humped camel. Intrepid Radio with Scotty Roberts and Dr. John Ward. Intelligent talk.
The fourth annual Paradigm Symposium will again be Bridging the Gap in Minneapolis, Minnesota, this October 1st through the 4th. The Paradigm Symposiums were founded and exist to present you, year after year, with the very best thinkers in their fields. From ancient cosmology to ancient aliens, archaeology to esoterics, alternative history to the sciences that illuminate our understanding of who we are and why we're here. Randall Carlson, Richard Dolan, Peter Robbins, Rita Louise, John Ward, Micah Hanks, and Barry Fitzgerald, along with several other phenomenal names in their fields, will be presenting at the Paradigm Symposium 2015, held at the Crown Plaza Hotel, Mall of America in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Get your tickets now for what will be another amazing, inspiring Paradigm Symposium. For tickets, go to ParadigmSymposium.com or call 651-468-8115. Come to think, leave inspired.
Imagine a place, beautiful, green, sloping mountains, and a rich, mysterious window into our ancient past. It's a culture the likes of which you won't find any place else. And while the place I'm describing is in Vermont, it's also the home of Inner Traditions, publishers of fine books on mind, body, and spirit for more than three decades. Inner Traditions are internationally recognized publishers of everything from occult to esoteric and spiritual books, as well as the leading authorities on alternative health, holistic healing, sacred sexuality, altered states of consciousness, and so much more. And frankly, it's not the kind of information you'll find just anywhere. Exploring the inner secrets of humanity requires thinking outside the box. And when it comes to Inner Traditions, the name says it all. All you have to do to learn more is visit innertraditions.com and you can receive a free catalog that will tell you all about their latest books and newest authors. That's Inner Traditions and Bear & Company, publishers of fine esoteric books for more than three decades. Find them online at innertraditions.com.
Carl Sagan once wrote that the questioning mind needs to be instilled with both skepticism and wonder, for the universe is a pretty big place, filled with undelved mysteries, sciences, and life that we've barely begun to comprehend. Every month, Intrepid Magazine brings you both the wondrous and the skeptical. Intrepid Magazine focuses on science, metaphysics, UFOs, politics, conspiracies, and unexplained phenomena, all offered up by Intrepid's cadre of writers and contributors, comprised of a host of seasoned authors, pundits, and recognized names in their fields. The universe is indeed a big place, and where other magazines leave off, Intrepid Mag is just beginning. Subscribe to Intrepid Magazine today at www.intrepidmag.com. That's www.intrepidmag.com.
For the thousands of wounded warriors returning from battle, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps wounded warriors translate their military experience to a civilian job. These extraordinary men and women bring more than just teamwork and inspiration to the workplace. They bring proven world-class job skills. And to ensure proper placement, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right job fit. Talented, skilled, and eager to get back to work, you have the opportunity to hire a seasoned veteran. Contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home, the brave.
In a world that has become increasingly aware of the benefits of organic and natural ingredients, Cedar Lake Reflections Tea is in the tea business simply for the love of the tea. Utilizing ingredients grown all around the world, blended with all natural organic herbs, fruits, and spices. Cedar Lake Reflections Tea is supremely conscious of the benefits of natural ingredients and the health benefits that modern science has proven and tea drinkers have experienced for centuries. Offering a wide variety of natural teas including black, white, Pu'er, Oolong, Spice, Wellness, and specially packaged iced tea blends, Cedar Lake Reflections Tea is both conscientious and passionate as they strive to provide you with the finest tea and herbs available for the ultimate tea drinking experience. Go to CedarLakeReflections.com to find affordable, high-quality, organic loose-leaf teas and tisanes and celebrate one of life's simple pleasures.
You can take the boys out of the city, but you can never plug a dam in Denmark with your thumb. Intrepid Radio, with a haphazardly focused Scotty Roberts and the rollicking adventurous Dr. John Ward.
Sticking their fingers in the hole in the dike of humanity.
Hey, folks, and we are back from our break. This is Scotty Roberts, and I got Dr. John Ward on over there in Sweden. How you doing tonight, John?
After that long break. It wasn't that long.
Oh, it wasn't long enough. Well, thank you for being contradictory. You couldn't just say, well, Scotty, yes, that was an amazingly long break, and I didn't know what to do with myself while we were doing it. So,
well, I managed to get a cigarette in and made myself a cup of coffee and go to the toilet all at the same time. I was pretty pleased with it, really.
Well, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Yeah.
And I managed to put the world to rights at the same time, but there you go.
All right. Well, you know, we're going to be talking with Michael Carter here as soon as we get him online with us. And when he comes on board, we're going to talk about his new book and some of the things that he talks about with the whole ancient alien subject matter. Now, you know as well as I do that that this topic is something that we have steered kind of clear of it because it's not something we give a whole lot of credence to these days.
Well, especially after Georgios Tsoukalos. I mean that guy with his weird haircut and turning around and saying that everybody, you know, chicken bones and so forth.
Of course. Yeah. And there it goes. And of course, you can't talk about the show Ancient Aliens without mentioning some of these guys. I want to welcome to the show tonight Reverend Michael Carter. Now, he is somebody that's got a couple of books out you might find extremely interesting, only because they're books that deal with topics that you're all aware of, topics that you like, topics that you find yourself intrigued by, and that is the questions of our origins. Any of you out there listening to this show, and I know there's many of you who are also into the whole ancient alien topic, whether you are invested in the topic or not, you found it interesting. Yet there's holes enough in the theories that make us say, that's really intriguing, and it's really different than the things I was raised, that I was taught on, brought up on. And I want to know something a little different. And so we tend to many times find our way to those areas. At first, when I entertained the Janalian theory, what came to my mind was the New Testament verse by Paul writing to Timothy. He says, there's going to be times where there are teachers that will tickle your ears, and it's going to be something different than what you've heard, and so it's kind of fun to listen to and get intrigued by it. Yet, I found that I didn't really fall under that, even when I was still within that structure. But I had questions. Now, Reverend Carter, he is somebody that in the ministry now, his MDiv degree, which is your Master of Divinity to be in ministry. He lives now in Asheville, North Carolina, where a good friend of ours, Micah Hanks, lives out there. He's written articles on UFOs, religion, for UFO magazine, Alien Encounters. He's written for MUFON. And this is a topic that he studied, and he's put out two books of his own, Alien Scriptures, the Extraterrestrials and the Holy Bible, and the book we're going to discuss tonight, and we'll probably mix them both up a bit, is A New World, If You Can Take It, God, Extraterrestrials, and the Evolution of Human Consciousness. And so we want to welcome to the show Reverend Michael Carter. Welcome.
Hey, thank you, Scotty. Thank you for having me. Hello, John.
Hey, good evening. Or good morning, I should say, from my part of the world.
Yes, he's over there in Sweden now, so it's still only about 4:40 in the morning.
And, wow.
So he has risen early, as he does every week. Michael, if I can call you Michael instead of Reverend Carter.
Yeah, that's fine.
Let's get into this topic a little bit right away. The first thing that I notice is in the title of your book. You talk about consciousness in a way that I don't hear, pardon me for this, normal ministers talk about consciousness. You don't hear a lot of talk about that. And you're talking about God, extraterrestrials, and the evolution of human consciousness. Describe why your book is entitled that, and what's drawn you to writing the things that you do.
Well, I bring consciousness to the table because in order for us to, I feel, as a species, to change or meet some of the challenges that we have internally and externally, it's that it's going to take a paradigm shift, and that's going to be that's going to have to come from each individual in their own time. And so that means I'm using the word consciousness as an awareness, an awakening. And quantum physics tells us this. Buddha told us this 500 years before Jesus, that thoughts are things and that we co-create. And so in our world, we focus on the things we don't want as opposed to focusing on the things we do want. Okay. So if we want peace, we don't really focus on peace. We focus on war. If we want money, we don't focus on prosperity or abundance. We focus on being broke. And so it's going to have to be a new way of thinking, a new paradigm shift, a new way of knowing who and what we are. And that's going to happen one person at a time. So that's why I placed that word in the title of the second book.
Okay. Now, you've got a great quote from John F. Kennedy right at the beginning of this. You said, "The great enemy of truth is very often not the lie, deliberate, contrived, and dishonest, but the myth, persistent, persuasive, and unrealistic. Too often we hold fast the cliches of our forebears. We subject all facts to a prefabricated set of interpretations. We enjoy the comfort of opinion without the discomfort of thought." Now, I like that because I find that in these fields, and John, you can pipe in on this as you want to, too, and this is no offense to any of our listeners out there, but there is a tendency in many fields. Let's take just religion alone, then also take things like ancient aliens, take things like Bigfoot, take all of these types of things that we label as these things that are outside the normal realm of what we experience. And the followers of these things don't do a lot of questioning. They don't do a lot of research. There are even proponents of these theories that don't spend an awful lot of time researching. But they fall back on other people's research. They fall back on things that they think are so. And many times you don't even find source points for what they're talking about. So when you were drawn to answer this question or to address this question, you've obviously, from what you're writing about in your book, you weren't stuck in this as a fan of the notion or the idea, and you were just expounding on somebody else's work. There was something that drew you into into finding a need to make some clarity on this topic from your point of view. You are also an experiencer. Is that the thing that drove you into this?
Yeah, that did drive me into it. And you know, we all stand on the shoulders of other people. So I do stand on other people, on those shoulders. Dr. Barry Downing, friend and colleague of mine, retired Presbyterian minister, wrote a book back in 1968 called The Bible and Flying Saucers. Morris K. Jessup died under mysterious circumstances back in the 50s, wrote a book on UFOs in the Bible, as did a sister, Reverend Virginia Brasington, who was from my part of the country. Eric Van Doniken, obviously. So, yes, I'm standing on the shoulders of other people. I love the life of the mind. I respect it. I love intellectual acuity, but I don't live there. There's an old joke, two Unitarians are walking down the street. There's a sign that says heaven, and there's a sign that says discussion about heaven. Of course, they go to the discussion. So I do want to be clear that, you know, I'm in a denomination that for the most part, if they can't see, hear, touch, taste, or smell it, it doesn't exist. But I think we've evolved enough as a species to know that that's simply not true, at least in my estimation. For me, my experiences they drive some people to look at propulsion systems and how do these beings fly and back engineer. There's a government back engineering and what have you. I'm sure that's very interesting. It just doesn't float my boat. For me, I was more concerned or more focused on the spiritual transformation that can occur, does not always occur, that can occur once you look one of these brothers and sisters in the eyes and you see that you're no longer the highest thing on the food chain. That there is a world that we haven't even begun to discover. And so I was more into the personal transformation aspect of it.
Okay.
I like that take, actually. So
I really do, too.
First time I've ever heard anybody put it in such a quite a way. Because, Michael, you hit upon something there which is quite close to my heart, and that is the spiritual transformation of people who, as people have heard me say this many times before, who are on a journey of discovery. They have questions which sometimes normal science cannot answer. And so they look outside of that box and they look within the alternative communities and the alternative genres or the various topics to look for those answers. And I think you've hit upon something there where within all of that, within that cadre, they find a spiritual meaning, a pathway.
Yeah, and I want to be clear. I mean, I think all three of us are very alarmed at the anti-intellectualism in this, well, here in the West, in this country. I know Brother John's in Sweden now, but there is an anti-intellectualism here that is alarming. And so Brother Scotty and I were talking earlier about just some of the leaps we do go on that goes on the TV show, where we get a hypothesis, and the next thing you know, someone says, "Well, you have to ask yourself," and then you're like, "Really?"
John and I talk about that all the time. I say,
yeah, I know. I'm sorry, Scott. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
And so I don't agree with everything that's on the show. It's helped me, get my name out to get people thinking, but you can't just. I mean. You can't, you know, if the only thing you have is a hammer, then everything looks like a nail.
That's very true.
It does. I mean, if that's all you got, then, so what I do is I'm open, I could be wrong. I could just be wrong. And so I always keep that in mind. These conclusions are just part of my experiences and part of the research I've done, which people have done before me. But I will say this to you, brothers, that, you know, you don't, the changes that are, that are facing us, the challenges, whether you have had contact or not, the spiritual transformation I think we will have to go through, that happens, that's going to happen anyway. You know, I don't do this work so people can, you know, I can get some type of celebrity or whatever. This is about how are we going to change the way we live? And how do we get away from this belief in separateness? And that has to happen whether a leprechaun visited you or a giant ant or, you know what I mean?
Yeah. John does have a problem with leprechauns.
Yes. Well, yes, because they're just so short. But my point is, you know, they can bite you. We'll leave it there. But that's where this I want to go with this. I mean, not just on the show, but that yes, I have some celebrity now because I've come out as a clergy person and said I've seen a couple races of beings, which I have. But the point and the message that I've got is not sexy. We hear it from saints and avatars and people who mean well, that we fight too much, that we're going to destroy ourselves. If you keep on doing what you're doing, you're going to keep on getting what you're getting. The point I'm driving at is that that happens even if I was just a manure shoveler on the street. You know, I'm part of humanity, and so I want to be part of the solution instead of part of the problem. And that means I'm going to have to be the change that I want to see in the world.
Okay.
If I want more love, then I need to be more loving. If I want more forgiveness, then I need to be more forgiving.
Now, tell us then how this whole topic of transformation, becoming, and we hear it, it's almost become cliche nowadays, be part of the change or be the change. I don't know if that was originally attributed to Gandhi or not, but I've seen that attached to Gandhi's name. Be the change in the world. So how does all of this mesh with talking about aliens, talking about the possibility that there was alien culture that contacted ours and had something to do with our development in the past, or at least contact that created the great mythologies, the great religions that are out there and so on? And I've said it before, John said it before, we said if there was any kind of contact, could this be the thing that drove men to interpret what they saw as God, angels, devils, demons, everything else in between, or gods, plural? And so you talk about your own experience at the same time. So how do you, let's start here, how do you as a minister, when you face your congregation, what kind of reaction do you get when people say, oh, you believe there's aliens? How do you start reconciling that, and how do you find that transformative?
Well, first of all, I'm like my government. I don't tell them everything.
Ah, okay.
Second of all, I don't preach this from my pulpit. You know, there are people who've come to the church because they've seen me on Ancient Aliens. There are people who have purchased the book. If anything, it's an open secret. But I don't get into these discussions, not unless someone specifically asks about it. And the main reason for that is that to me, it's not about the contact. To me, it's about the transformation. And so, you know, it's like in the Christian religion, we've made Jesus a rock star about his personality, but we just can't seem to get those teachings under our belt.
Right.
And so I'm not trying to compare myself with that, but this is not a new message. This message of oneness, this message of that what I have to love my neighbor as myself, that what I do to you, I really do to me. This is not new. This is not a new message. It's just hard to grasp, and you can just pick up a newspaper. But what I started to realize was that, and this is what religion really did not tell me, that I was more powerful than I thought I was, that thoughts are things, that I do have more control, for lack of a better word, on my day-to-day existence. Because it's all about, like Buddha said, your thoughts are things. You create your life with your thoughts. And so rather than looking at the teachings of Jesus or anybody else as someone saying, I'm not worthy, that I had to die so you could survive, and if you don't believe what I believe, you're going to be barbecued for the rest of your life. there were other messages that were in the Bible or taken out of the Bible, and just things that I found on my own. Just because somebody said something 5,000 years ago doesn't necessarily mean it's true. And so with my contacts with specific beings, I'm not one of these people that say they all want to come here and sing Kumbaya. I don't think that's realistic or true. I just found out that it was the same message, that you can transcend. As a matter of fact, not only can you, but you may want to really think about putting it into practice, because we can destroy ourselves several times over. So I don't see any. The other thing that glues religion to this subject is to technology. So here we have in the ET mythos, you have the merging of science and spirituality. You have the mythos of these benevolent beings. Even if we just look at it in the sense of myth, meaning not true, which is not the way I'm using the word. We have these beings who are more evolved ethically, spiritually, and technologically, saying that you too can do this, but you're going to have to work at it. And you're going to have to really be serious about doing this. That was a message of hope that religion wasn't really giving me, even before I had these experiences. And that's why I went away from the traditional Baptist message, because people don't rise to low expectations, I found out.
I want you to talk with us a little bit about your experiences, only because I everybody has their own experience, but I think it's pertinent in that if these are the things that drove you to start thinking in these areas, what is it that you experienced? You say that there were beings, if I heard you correctly, beings that were really telling you the same kind of message. What was it that you experienced? Yeah. Many in the faith will say that these are visions, or they will say this is God talking to them, or it's demons, or whatever it might be. How did you interpret what you saw?
Well, you know, a wise rabbi once said about 2,500 years ago that by their fruits you shall know them. And that just sticks with me. That sticks with me whether they're off-world intelligences or it's my neighbor next door. On December 28th, 1989, I talk about it in the book. So I continue to have experiences, but I'll give you the first one. The initial contact, I was on the Yucatan Peninsula at the pyramids in Chichen Itza and Tulum. And I flew back to New York with, at that time, my girlfriend, who later became my first wife. And I went to a party that night. I didn't really want to go because I was tired, but I wanted to kind of go and show off my tan, and, you know, it was freezing in New York, and I had just come from 90 degrees. So yeah. I wanted to gloat, and I wasn't above that. And so I go to the party, I make my appearance, I'm there 90 minutes or so. No adult beverages were consumed by me. I had some finger food, maybe some deviled eggs and snacks, chips or something. And I got back, went back to Times Square and caught the subway home. Late that night, when I don't even know to this day why I got up, maybe I sensed the presence, I don't know whether I had to go to the bathroom, I sleep on my stomach and I rolled over to get out of the bed, and I thought I was going to have a heart attack. There was a being on the edge of my bed who was surrounded in this blue, cobalt blue kind of light, and had this aura around them, like this whitish color, like you see on Renaissance paintings. And it had on a jumpsuit, a tight-fitting jumpsuit, it looked like, that was like Reynolds wrap. It was aluminum foil looking.
Well, you know what, Michael, hold that thought, like suspense. It's going to be like a cliffhanger here. Now we've got to go out to break. We're at the top of the hour, folks. We're talking with Reverend Michael J.S. Carter about his book, God Extra, that's subtitled, I like the subtitle almost better than the main title itself, but God, Extraterrestrials, and the Evolution of Human Consciousness. So folks, stay tuned. John and I are going to be right back with Michael Carter after these words. Sit tight. Don't go away.
It's a lot like riding a two-humped camel. Intrepid Radio with Scotty Roberts and Dr. John Ward. Intelligent talk.
The fourth annual Paradigm Symposium will again be Bridging the Gap in Minneapolis, Minnesota, this October 1st through the 4th. The Paradigm Symposiums were founded and exist to present you year after year with the very best thinkers in their fields, from ancient cosmology to ancient aliens, archaeology to esoterics, alternative history to the sciences that illuminate our understanding of who we are and why we're here. Randall Carlson, Richard Dolan, Peter Robbins, Rita Louise, John Ward, Micah Hanks, and Barry Fitzgerald, along with several other phenomenal names in their fields, will be presenting at the Paradigm Symposium 2015, held at the Crown Plaza Hotel, Mall of America, in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Get your tickets now for what will be another amazing, inspiring Paradigm Symposium. For tickets, go to ParadigmSymposium.com or call 651-468-8115. Come to think, leave inspired.
Imagine a place, beautiful, green, sloping mountains, and a rich, mysterious window into our ancient past. It's a culture the likes of which you won't find anyplace else. And while the place I'm describing is in Vermont, it's also the home of Inner Traditions, publishers of fine books on mind, body, and spirit for more than three decades. Inner Traditions are internationally recognized publishers of everything from occult to esoteric and spiritual books, as well as the leading authorities on alternative health, holistic healing, sacred sexuality, altered states of consciousness, and so much more. And frankly, it's not the kind of information you'll find just anywhere. Exploring the inner secrets of humanity requires thinking outside the box. And when it comes to Inner Traditions, the name says it all. All you have to do to learn more is visit innertraditions.com and you can receive a free catalog that will tell you all about their latest books and newest authors. That's Inner Traditions and Bear & Company, publishers of fine esoteric books for more than three decades. Find them online at innertraditions.com.
I listen to Intrepid with Dr. John Ward and Scotty, transmitting across all nations, talk radio with pure intelligence. Broadcasting to you live each Sunday from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern on Intrepid Paradigm Radio. Hapu, bless you, John and Scotty.
You are listening to the Intrepid Paradigm Radio Network in association with EBN, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota, and Hudson, Wisconsin.
Live in simultaneous broadcast from a hidden cornfield in Wisconsin and some time-forgotten holy of holies in the Theban Mountains of Luxor, Egypt. Intrepid Radio with Scotty Roberts and Dr. John Ward. Intelligent talk.
All right, folks, we are back from our lengthy break. This is Scotty Roberts over here in Wisconsin. Just not far, a stone's throw from the twin cities of St. Paul and Minneapolis, Minnesota. And we've got John Ward over there, who usually comes to us live from his dahabeah, basking on the decks in the sunshine, waters of the Nile lapping at his feet. And now he's over in Sweden, where he's fighting mosquitoes and humid weather and blonde people. So, John, how's it going over there?
That was a very lengthy break, I thought.
It was a very lengthy break.
Far, far more lengthier than the previous break.
It was far, far more lengthier than the previous break. Yes, exactly. Probably by a couple of minutes. We had a little overlap in there, but that's okay.
Okay. All right.
So,
I'm interested to hear about Michael.
Me too. I want to jump right back into this. Michael, welcome back to the Intrepid Radio program.
Thank you, sir.
And so far, this has been pretty fascinating. I want you to kind of pick up where you left off. We left people with a cliffhanger about 8 minutes ago. And woke up and you saw a being.
I saw this brother there. I don't know, male, female. I'm going to assume it was a man. Maybe that's just my sexism. I don't know. But all I know is that I've never been that frightened in all of my life. And the being wasn't gray. It chalk white, about 4 feet tall, had the bulbous head. And I just pulled I'm not ashamed. I pulled the covers up over my head like with some horror movie.
And, you know, that kind of stuff. I don't care if it's aliens. I don't care if it's ghosts. I don't care if it's visions from God. Why do they always have to happen when you're in bed and you wake up in the middle of the night and bam, something's staring at you? Is it a dream? Is it, what is it that prompts it? Is it the dream state or whatever? But they're always there. And I remember once telling an entity in my house when I was talking. I said, you know, you can appear to me, you can tell me anything you want, but don't do it at night. I'll pee my sheets.
Oh, man. It was, well, let me tell you. So I pulled the covers up, and we're talking about, I don't know if you've ever been to New York, but I was living in a residential hotel, 45 West 81st Street, apartment 1506, the Excelsior Hotel, between Columbus and the Park on the Upper West Side. So, this, I pull the covers up, and all of a sudden I hear this whoosh, like this wind. But what got me was that the temperature had changed. It was almost like I felt like I was outdoors. And I pulled the cover down. Nothing was there. Nothing was there.
Okay.
And so this started happening every new and full moon, so about twice a month. I went down to, there was a store on Spring Street, you know it, called the Strand Bookstore.
Yes.
I felt like I was buying condoms or something. I just bought everything I could on UFOs or any type of contact. And I picked up a book called Encounters by Dr. Edith Fiore. And it was about people who were having things happen to them that happened to me. But in the back, there was a litany of mental health professionals that maybe you just might want to check out. So I go to the counter, and this guy says to me, you don't look good. Are you okay? And I was kind of hunched over, and I said, yeah, I'm okay. And I put the books on the counter, and he looked at them, and he wouldn't just like do his job and ring him up so I could go. He wanted to start a conversation. So he says, are you okay? I said, yeah. He said, do you get any sleep? What's going on? I said, look, let me buy it. And so he says, is this a hobby or is this for real? Looking at the book.
No, he's like, just let me buy my alien books. Okay.
Yes. So he says, I say, it's for real. So he gives me the number to a support group.
Really?
And so you do.
You're a local drugstore. That's where you get everything.
I took it, and it kind of helped me on my journey. And I went to see one of the people in the book who's a mental health professional. But after that, I couldn't stop reading. I had to read any and everything on it. And of course, when I found Dr. Barry Downing's book, I was equally thrilled, because here was a clergy person who did not have the experiences, but at least he was writing about it. Now, he and I are very different. Well, at least we were very different theologically speaking, but at least he was a clergy person hypothesizing that if you put the word angel, if you, everywhere you see the word angel in the Bible, if you put the word star person or ET or whatever, it started to make a little more sense.
Okay. Now, but that's an interesting experiment too. You could do that with a lot of different things. And you could come up with something very interesting. So what did you find by putting those words in? What did that lead you to start thinking?
It just led me to start thinking that our ancestors were trying to tell us that in the nomenclature, in the language of their day, that they were having face-to-face encounters with off-world intelligences. That's what I got out of it. And it just made perfect sense to me. And so that's where I took it. I said, if I saw these beings in 1989, then they were probably here in 1989 BCE or before. And so that's where my research had led me.
Now, I'm sure. Sorry. Go ahead, John. Go ahead.
Yeah. Why do you think, or why do you say that they are not of this world?
Well, I think if they come in craft, and some of them may not need the craft, and they could be interdimensional, but I think if you have a craft to get here, then you're probably not from here.
So,
but let me say this, though, okay, guys, because I know where we're getting ready to go in some ways, but it doesn't matter whether they're from Venus, whether they're from in the Earth. They're bringing us some teachings, at least the ones that I've encountered, that are trying to help us evolve. They could be from under one of my books here. And what happens is we get so caught up in the sensation, well, they hear that. That's not really the issue. The issue is that they're trying to tell us, if you keep on doing what you're doing, something not okay is going to happen. And so we get caught up in all this information. I got more information than I know what to do with. I'm looking for some wisdom. And so whether we can argue or debate or speculate where they come from, but the point is, what are we going to do about the message that's been left with us? That's my point.
Well, let's go there for a second, because you'll start almost immediately losing people who have nothing invested in this train of thought. You'll start losing people with the, and I'm sure you've experienced this already, with the, I experienced this guy that was white and he was glowing blue in my bedroom and I heard whooshing sounds.
I don't lose anybody. As a matter of fact, there are more people coming out talking about, hey man, I'm glad you said that because I never really told anybody this.
Oh.
Somehow, That's not, listen, you look at the data, even in this country, 48% of the American people believe that there's life on other planets.
Okay.
Okay, so that's about half. 50% of the American people believe the government is lying about something. You have Britain, France, China, Brazil, Mexico. You have these governments releasing classified documents about extraterrestrial life. So no, we're not living in the 1950s when, no, we're not losing anybody. There were 2,000 people, over 2,000 people at the contact in the desert where I just came from. So that paradigm is over. If anything, people are saying, what has taken people so long to get to this? So I'm not losing anybody. And if I do lose people, I'm not here to prove I'm right. If it doesn't fit your paradigm, that's okay. I'm not here to convince anybody.
Okay.
I gave that up a long time ago. I'm just telling my story. But if people want to believe it, that's cool. And if they don't want to believe it, that's cool. But look at the data. It's just happening all over the world. And people are not – Ancient Aliens may not be the most intellectually stimulating show. But the reason that's on for 8 seasons is because it's captured people's imaginations, because people know that it's happening.
Well, and, you know, I've run into enough people and have heard enough people where I would have to say the same thing, that there are a lot of people out there. But when I start telling a story to say, I had this experience, I will generally find people reacting one of a couple of different ways. They will either go, wow, that's a fascinating story, and they're either invested in my story or they're placating me, or they'll take a step backward, at least in tone. They will say, okay, right, you had an experience. So we get, let's move beyond that particular thing, because I think you address that well enough. What kind of message? You talk about the message that they were bringing. Whitley Strieber is somebody I've talked to and is pretty well known in these fields.
Yeah, I know Whitley very well. You look like him a little bit. You look like him with that fedora on him.
I thought it was the gray hair.
you look like Whitley a little, but go on. You remind me of him.
He talks about his experiences and all these messages. I've read one of his books called The Key, which is about a quarter of an inch thick, and it was a very profound little book, I thought. But you have to walk away from that saying either he had an incredible experience here with an incredible message being delivered, or the man is a little wacky. You got to walk away with one of those two opinions. And so with your experience, let's avoid the wacky and say, what was it that was given to you? What kind of message was delivered? Did you have conversations? Did you have, or were you just an audience? What is it that you experienced that has put you on this different path?
Well, okay. And it's not a different path. It is the same thing that at least the three monotheistic religions are based on people having these type of experiences, whether it's Muhammad in the cave and Gabriel comes. I mean, these are the same type of experiences. I'm certainly not trying to start a new religion, but it's that, and I'll say it again, we believe in this illusion of separateness, that we are very warlike and violent towards one another, and that we are violent towards the earth. Not sexy, it may be said in different ways, but it's the same message through all the millennia. And so for me, that lends credence to, quote unquote, the truthfulness, the veracity of any of these contacts, because at least the message is consistent. Now, you know, we can argue about, what we talked about before, whether George Adamski or Billy Meyer, we can argue that, but then we miss the forest for the trees. There's the message that humanity needs to step up if humanity wants to exist. So for me, it's like, that's it. I stopped trying to convince people years ago. It's just not worth it to me.
Sure.
People who need to hear it will hear it. But it makes sense. Okay. We are warlike. We are violent. We need to change that if we want to go to the next stage of evolution. Sometimes I was shown pictures of things. Sometimes I would hear them talk, but their mouths wouldn't move. It's more telepathic. But that message is, we, in order to evolve, which they're talking about spiritually, we've got to shift our consciousness to away from this belief in separation. I mean, it's really that simple, guys. It's not sexy. It's not, you know, the show's over. But we've heard this before. We've heard it. It's in the message of Yeshua. It's in the message of some of the prophets. It's in the message of people who are the contactees. John Matt worked with all these contactees. It's right there.
So you talk about, and I'm looking right at your book right now, where I'm on this chapter 3, God Does Not Drive a Flying Saucer. And you talk about how human beings, let's talk about this concept before we dig into anything here in particular that I'm looking at, but you say human beings have created God in their own image. And this is very true. I mean, we even dealt with this when I was in ministry. We talked about at least metaphorically saying, are you creating God in your image, or are you seeing God for who God is, we used to ask when I was in ministry. And yet you're saying that human beings have created God in their image. Is this, what is the basis of this, and what about this is, I guess I want to tie it to this transformation you're talking about, because I hear lots of these messages from contactees. Some of them seem very common sense, and some of them seem sane. Some of the contactees I've talked to seem very off the edge, off the scale, pushing the envelope a little bit. But they, many of them bring back this same message, saying they're talking about this oneness that we're all supposed to be, and so on. There's something about that that, to me, starts to sound like it's this sing-songy, making the universe into what we want it to be, making the picture to fit what we want it to be. Address that for a second, because I am not a skeptic of the phenomenon or of the experience, but I wonder about the message that gets delivered. And you say it ties into the same messages as Yeshua or Jesus, as some people don't recognize him by that name. The prophets and other religious prophets, and probably even to some of the gods and the religious teachers that John knows of in ancient Egypt. So all of these messages are out there. What makes you, what has convinced you that we've created God in our own image? We've created are we not doing the same thing with this type of message that's coming? It seems like it's this, almost like this, you mentioned Kumbaya, it's got this Kumbaya message to it. What, talk about that for a minute. Why is that message there? What, why is that being given? And if my question sounds confusing, it's because the topic confuses me a bit.
Yeah, well, for me, we make, you know, you can pick up a newspaper. We create God in our own image when God hates all the same people we hate. A lot of...
that's true.
You know, Franklin Graham down here, he's a little different. He's different from his father, Billy, but he's a very homophobic, misogynistic young man. But he is a minister, and the God that he worships agrees with him. So that's one of the examples of making God in our own image. There are many, many more, whether you look at it racially or the big culture wars about marriage equality. Everyone seems to know personally what God, I put that in quotes, thinks or wants. The thing about the ET theology, if I can put it that way, is that that's none of that. It's a more mature, sophisticated view of the universe, where there's no personal God who's going to punish you if you're naughty or nice, or barbecue you for eternity. It's something that it's certainly not anthropomorphic. You can use the word consciousness. You can use the word intelligence, but it's not separate from us. And there's that theme of separateness. And most people, we've been taught that God is outside of ourselves, that we are to be grateful and grovel and to be, because we're not worthy. And, there's this Santa Claus type of, mentality. And so, but that's absent. Not only is that absent, and really, even if we're not talking about off-world intelligences, most of the mystics of any religion somehow, which is probably why they were so persecuted, whether it's the Sufis in Islam or the Gnosticism in Christianity, it's that there is no separation, that there is this oneness, and that, the Kumbaya message is, listen, it doesn't mean that you're not going to have challenges. It's not that we're going to skip through the tulips together, but there is a basic, there's a basic commonality that includes every living thing, animals, sentient beings, us. And that's a more mature, a more rational, if you want to use the word, quantum physics is telling us this, that everything is connected, but we just don't believe it. Now we're starting to a bit because science told us this, but there were mystics telling us this millennia ago. And so that makes sense to me. It holds me accountable because what I do, if I'm going to love my neighbor as myself, or at least attempt to, that's the key. People focus on the first part, love your neighbor. No, as yourself, which is the hardest thing to do. But that means I'm accountable. The whole right. is greater. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts. And that, to me, resonates.
Now, that's a message that it seems to be, and we've only got about a minute until we have to go out to break, so maybe we can touch on this, and then if you can stick around, pick it up when we come back.
Sure.
But this idea that all the aliens out there that we encounter, they're benevolent. They want to give us something. They want to help us become part of the galactic empire, whatever it is. It's benevolent. And yet, yeah. there are a lot of futurists and scientists who say, if there is indeed life out there, what's to say they're not exactly like we are, and you want to go conquer that unknown thing, or take it over, that there might not be. If there is a visitation, it's probably a precursor to invasion, rather than benevolent scientific exchange. How do you speak to that?
I just speak to that that's arrogant, and it's a very fearful perspective. It's also arrogant to think that if there's life out there, it has to be like us, as if we're the pinnacle. That's how we got into this mess in the first place. I just think it's arrogant and fear-based. I do not believe that all off-world intelligences are benevolent, but I do know that that kind of attitude is how we have slavery, how we take other people's lands. Well, they're
very
all
true.
Like that. They're all like that. And that's got to be the consciousness that we need to get away from.
Okay. Well, let's leave it for the bottom of this hour. And, folks, we're going to be back after this break with Reverend Michael Carter, and we're going to be talking about this. And I want to get more into this whole transformation consciousness thing. It's so hard to take on a book like this and try to dig into all the little aspects of it, and we're hopefully hitting the points that, Michael, you want to share with everybody and folks that you need to hear. So stick around. John and I will be back with our guests right after this at the Intrepid Radio program right here on the IPBN Alternative Talk Radio Network. Stand by. We'll be right back.
It's a lot like riding a two-humped camel. Intrepid Radio with Scotty Roberts and Dr. John Ward. Intelligent talk.
The 4th Annual Paradigm Symposium will again be Bridging the Gap in Minneapolis, Minnesota, this October 1st through the 4th. The Paradigm Symposiums were founded and exist to present you, year after year, with the very best thinkers in their fields, from ancient cosmology to ancient aliens, archaeology to esoterics, alternative history to the sciences that illuminate our understanding of who we are and why we're here. Randall Carlson, Richard Dolan, Peter Robbins, Rita Louise, John Ward, Micah Hanks, and Barry Fitzgerald, along with several other phenomenal names in their fields, will be presenting at the Paradigm Symposium 2015, held at the Crown Plaza Hotel, Mall of America, in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Get your tickets now for what will be another amazing, inspiring Paradigm Symposium. For tickets, go to ParadigmSymposium.com or call 651-468-8115. Come to think, leave inspired.
Imagine a place, beautiful, green, sloping mountains, and a rich, mysterious window into our ancient past. It's a culture the likes of which you won't find any place else. And while the place I'm describing is in Vermont, it's also the home of Inner Traditions, publishers of fine books on mind, body, and spirit for more than three decades. Inner Traditions are internationally recognized publishers of everything from occult to esoteric and spiritual books, as well as the leading authorities on alternative health, holistic healing, sacred sexuality, altered states of consciousness, and so much more. And frankly, it's not the kind of information you'll find just anywhere. Exploring the inner secrets of humanity requires thinking outside the box. And when it comes to Inner Traditions, the name says it all. All you have to do to learn more is visit innertraditions.com, and you can receive a free catalog that will tell you all about their latest books and newest authors. That's Inner Traditions and Bear & Company, publishers of fine esoteric books for more than three decades. Find them online at innertraditions.com.
Carl Sagan once wrote that the questioning mind needs to be instilled with both skepticism and wonder, for the universe is a pretty big place, filled with undelved mysteries, sciences, and life that we've barely begun to comprehend. Every month, Intrepid Magazine brings you both the wondrous and the skeptical. Intrepid Magazine focuses on science, metaphysics, UFOs, politics, conspiracies, and unexplained phenomena, all offered up by Intrepid's cadre of writers and contributors, comprised of a host of seasoned authors, pundits, and recognized names in their fields. The universe is indeed a big place, and where other magazines leave off, Intrepid Mag is just beginning. Subscribe to Intrepid Magazine today at www.intrepidmag.com. That's www.intrepidmag.com.
For the thousands of wounded warriors returning from battle, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps wounded warriors translate their military experience to a civilian job. These extraordinary men and women bring more than just teamwork and inspiration to the workplace. They bring proven world-class job skills. And to ensure proper placement, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right job fit. Talented, skilled, eager to get back to work, you have the opportunity to hire a seasoned veteran. Contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home, the brave.
In a world that has become increasingly aware of the benefits of organic and natural ingredients, Cedar Lake Reflections Tea is in the tea business simply for the love of the tea, utilizing ingredients grown all around the world, blended with all natural organic herbs, fruits, and spices. Cedar Lake Reflections Tea is supremely conscious of the benefits of natural ingredients and the health benefits that modern science has proven and tea drinkers have experienced for centuries. Offering a wide variety of natural teas including black, white, pu'er, oolong, spiced wellness, and specially packaged iced tea blends, Cedar Lake Reflections Tea is both conscientious and passionate as they strive to provide you with the finest tea and herbs available for the ultimate tea drinking experience. Go to CedarLakeReflections.com to find affordable, high-quality, organic loose-leaf teas and tisanes and celebrate one of life's simple pleasures.
You can take the boys out of the city, but you can never plug a dam in Denmark with your thumb. Intrepid Radio, with a haphazardly focused Scotty Roberts and the rollicking adventurous Dr. John Ward.
Sticking their fingers in the hole in the dike of humanity.
And I don't think there's really any other way to tackle that other than to stick your finger in the hole of the dike of humanity, as we like to say we do around here. Sticking his finger in the hole of the dike of humanity, or at least parts of it, is Reverend Michael Carter, who has written the book we are talking about tonight. And I think that it's something that you're going to want to go take a look at. You're going to want to pick this up, called A New World If You Can Take It, subtitled God, Extraterrestrials, and the Evolution of Consciousness. Welcome back to the last segment here, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm enjoying this.
I wish we had hours and hours and hours to do this, because we can just get lost in trains of thought here and trying to clarify and wanting to understand.
Yeah, Michael. Now, let me add a little caveat to this question first.
Okay.
And that is, don't take offense to it.
No, not at all.
If the message that you're receiving via these entities is so important for the changing of humankind's consciousness, for us to evolve, why do you not then preach it from the pulpit where you would be able to reach a far wider audience?
Well, I don't really need to preach UFO theology from my pulpit, because if I'm talking about love if I'm talking about how we can move from love to fear, it's the same thing. You meet people at their map of the world. You use the language that they can resonate with. Any skilled speaker or any skilled orator will do that. And so, I mean, listen, Jesus, if I'm using this as an example, if Jesus is a star person, which I believe he could have been, he's not talking about UFOs in his oratory, in his Sermon on the Mount. He's meeting people at their map of the world.
So do you think it, and again, this is the second part of this question, really.
Sure.
You've answered that perfectly, as I thought you would do. But do you think that having the attachment of, shall we say, ufological attachment to it loses some credence to the overall message? If the teachings of Jesus and the teachings of any religious text, be them ancient or modern, are that of evolving consciousness, to love thy neighbor, to do no ill, etc., 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 to allow us to evolve into a more of a utopian society, why attach the ufological? And I know what your answer is going to be, but I just like to hear that.
Well, you're saying why attach it? I think you meet people that, like I said, you meet people at their map of the world. I have people in my congregation who would probably be resistant, as well as people who purchased my books and supported me. And so my calling is to meet people at their map of the world and at least try to model what I say I believe. So to me, it's like kind of arguing over whether I use the King James Version or I use this version. We can get caught up into that, but as long as you get the message, whether you believe in UFOs or not, the point is that if we're going to be the people we say we want to be, and I'll use the words of Dr. King, that peace is not the goal. Peace is the tool we use to achieve our goals. So what difference would it make if I said, well, this came from a UFO occupant, or supposed to just saying, we've got to learn to shift our consciousness from fear to love. Why quibble mm-hmm. over where it comes from? The point is that we're not getting it, but we are getting it in some ways. But that's, I think we see the forest from the trees. I mean, we don't see the forest for the trees. Maybe somebody else's church can talk about this. And that's okay. Everybody's got a piece of the puzzle. We all don't have to be uniform in how we get the message out, as long as it gets out.
I understand that. Now, you say in the book, you've got a chapter, you're talking about who or what is God. And you quote Spinoza, who said, God is not he who is, but that which is. And you also have a quote from somebody called Marilyn Ferguson, named Marilyn Ferguson, following the wrong God home, we have seen all of those we did not understand as alien, the enemy. Failing to comprehend each other's politics, cultures, and subcultures, which often are based on different worldview, we question each other's motives, denied each other's humanity. Now, I understand what's behind that. So are you saying, then, that the evolution, the road to evolution, or the path of evolution to this higher consciousness, that this is understanding that, I'm not going to try to put words in your mouth, but try to see if I can figure out and get to the core of this quickly. You're saying that there are beings that are expressing this message to people out there, but it's the message we all know we need to hear in some respect. So it adds a layer of skepticism to it right away from people who will not accept that there are beings who can speak to us. And and again, and I don't want to put words into John's mouth either, but I know I have, and I know John has to some extent. There are things we've experienced that are not like what you've experienced, that are undeniably things that we don't have answers to or quick explanations to, because it's in that realm of the not so natural. So this road and path, this evolution to consciousness, is it realizing that there is somebody observing us out there? Is it realizing it that those are really God? What is the core of your message here that you want people to take with this?
The core of my message is that we could never know what God is, because the finite can never comprehend the infinite. The point is that we need to stop arguing about who and what is God, and maybe perhaps focus more on having an experience of God.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
60%.
Because I know in the religion that I was not necessarily brought up in, but I went into on my own as a youth, and was in ministry and all my education and so on. That is a religion that's pretty strict about the way you view God. And Catholicism is a very strict religion on how you view God. Islam is very strict about how you view God. And if you fall outside those realms, there's something you told me. I've heard it from you twice today now when we talked earlier today. And then again in this conversation, you said that the things that we, our religion, all the things that we deny in our religion, if you know where I'm going with this, maybe you can give me the direct quote.
There's a wonderful quote. Yeah. But first of all, you know, Jesus was not Jewish enough, which besides that in the politics of the day,
that's true.
Life, okay. There's a wonderful quote by Dr. Howard Thurman, who was a mentor to Dr. King. And he said that any truths that are found in religion are there because they're true. They're not true because they're found in the religion.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
There's also something you said is that all the things that we hate from within our religion seem to be, and I can't remember your quote on that, and that's what I was stumbling through.
I was saying that you can tell when you've made God in your own image, because God hates all the same things you hate.
That's it. God hates all the same things I hate.
Yes.
God's a conservative, or God's a liberal, or God's
yes,
a right.
Yes,
right.
Yes. And so that's the type of thing. And, you know, listen, I've never seen a Star Wars movie, but I know the quote from Yoda that you have to unlearn what you've learned. And sometimes it's more difficult to unlearn than it is to learn something new. I feel that in order to help facilitate some type of more peaceful discussion, we have to have a theology of humility, which is a theology of saying that mine is not a better way, it's simply a different way, and that I could be wrong. You know, I could be wrong. It's the certainty that is killing us, because once I know the answer, I don't need to grow anymore, because I've already got the answers. I think that's dangerous, especially in areas of religion, and especially now, because you could just pick up a newspaper and see. And I'm not just talking about ISIS, but again, the message is what's important. And I think if you talk to any contactee who has had these experiences, they will tell you that it's not about, it really is about the message, but we want to make celebrity culture. So we want to make celebrities out of Whitley and people like that. And I respect Whitley and love Whitley. Well, I think Whitley was saying the same thing in a way. Just listen to what I'm trying to tell you. It's not about me. It's about this, because we're all in it. And this is whether you have UFO contacts or not. Are we going to be part of the solution, or are we going to be part of the problem?
Those are good questions. And I'm looking at something in your book that I think that ties right to this. I don't even know where I am in the book here. I was just flipping through a couple of pages here. But you said, I was a human doing early on in my life instead of a human being. I was so busy running to and fro, talking to this one and seeking out that one. One does not heal being by doing. Again, essence is not found in how life appears. That's just the veil. To find your essence, you must lift the veil. Essence of your or your true self is the truth of who you are. Essence isn't temporal or the constantly changing. Essence is the eternal, that which is unchanging. The constant, if you will, because we are love and love is constant. If you aren't looking within, you can go your entire life not knowing who you really are. And then you say, you can't find your essence while blaming others or holding on to the past. You can't do this when you're feeling guilty and are beating yourself up for past or current mistakes. And you say, judgment of self and others must be carefully scrutinized. I like what I'm reading there, and I like what you're saying there. Because I think this is the way a lot of us walk around in life. And are you saying that this is that transformation? As John and I have had several guests on our show that talk about being awake, and that's something that really struck home with me. It's wake up. It's that being awake, and you know when you're awake, or you know when you're on that road to being awake, because it's such a contrast to having been asleep.
I think that's exactly what I mean. It's the Buddha story, isn't it? When they ask him, "Are you a god? Are you a prophet?" No, no. Well, what are you? I'm awake. And I think religion has a lot to do with why we're asleep. Because not just religion, but
sure.
Primarily, yeah, because we're constantly told we're not good enough. We're constantly told we're not worthy. So you go on Sunday and you get an hour or two dose of that. And then you go watch television and you get told you're not enough. You don't use this deodorant. If you don't drive this car, you won't get laid. You know, you're just being told, I don't have enough. I got to use this deodorant. I got to get it's an assault. And it takes a very centered person to even stay centered with all of that. And so part of being awake is saying, I don't need any of this. Not really. Not on a core level, I don't. Yes, we need money to survive. We want to live comfortably and something, you know, yes.
Sure.
But I'm just saying, but it's like the attachment. It's like the Buddhists talk about being detached. You know, that's what I'm talking about. Because your true self, when you leave here, you're not taking all that stuff with you anyway.
Oh, that's very true.
You know, and so when you're awake, you see that. You can see the good times. You can see the challenges. But you know, on a level, it will pass on some level. And you'll still be who you are. So you're not tossed and with every, you know, with every crisis that CNN says we have, or Fox News or whatever. That's going from personality to essence. The part of you that is changeless, the part of you that will be here when your body is gone, that's your consciousness.
And so for you with, and I'm trying to figure out how to fit this in, you've got something toward the end of your book from Dr. John Mack, and he's talking about abductees. He says, abductees come to appreciate that the universe is filled with intelligences and is itself intelligence. They develop a sense of awe before a mysterious cosmos that becomes sacred and ensouled. And then he goes on toward the end of this, he says, the change that abductees experience is fundamentally that they may no longer feel identification with a narrow social rule and gain a sense of oneness with all of creation, a kind of universal connectedness. With the opening of consciousness to new domains of being, abductees encounter patterns and a design of life that brings them a profound sense of interconnectedness in the universe. So I am beginning to ascertain from what your experiences are, and the things you're writing about in your book, is you're wanting people to, it's like trying to describe the smell of the number 9 to people, for people who have not experienced this.
Yeah. You know what, I think the Native American, our Native American brothers and sisters have it down. They may argue over a lot of things. I don't want to over-romanticize. I mean, everything's not dances with wolves, right?
But right, what
they could do is that they could live with mystery. The brothers and sisters in, you know, the Sioux, the Dakota, they called God the great mystery, Wonka Tonkin. And they could live with that mystery. And in the West, we can't. We
want to define God.
We get a little nervous. And I think that we're going to have to change that in a way. And be comfortable with saying, you know, I really don't know. The possibilities are endless. I don't know. Neil Donald Walsh talks about it in his Conversations with God books. Mine is not a better way. It's simply a different way. And I can invite you to in conversation with that. Or you don't have to be. But this certainty that I have God on speed dial, and he knows about who you sleep with or your political affiliation, that's just not mature. It's just not the way to evolution. It's petty. It's sophomoric, if it's that old, maybe adolescent, childish, and it's dangerous. It's very dangerous.
I would love to have another conversation with you where we can talk about some of these things on a get out of the aliens for a bit and talk about a more practical level.
Yes.
Of how you want to incorporate the things that you've learned and the things that you've experienced and why that's important on a much more universal scale down to the practical. I'd like to dig into your brain a little bit on how you approach your congregation and how you approach items like ISIS and preparing for the possibilities of the things that ISIS could bring to the table. John and I talk about that an awful lot in our programs, and we talk about politics, and we talk about the ills of society and the ills of government and so on and so forth. And after a while, this stuff can weigh so heavy on your mind that there's hardly any room left to be able to see that there could be something positive out there.
Well, you're right, Scotty. And you know what? We can just set it up. I want to go back to just at the top of the show because I know we're running out of time. Yeah, I mean, I'm a pragmatist, brother. I mean, I'm more mystical in my theory, but I'm a pragmatist. I don't believe that all beings coming here or, you know, are here to just, like I said, sing kumbaya. But I do know I'm a 12-stepper, not for alcohol, but for codependency. And the great, it's a really powerful spirituality. But, you know, what was so powerful about it is that I got it on a not on a narcissistic level, that I'm only responsible for me. And if my job is not to monitor other people's lives or their spiritual growth. And I it was just freeing. And a lot of us do that because we don't have to look at ourselves. And I found I was less overwhelmed. Because I know that I hear what you're saying about it could be cliche, but I'm really only responsible for me. If I walk my talk, I'm contributing to a different world. But, and you know, it just takes so much energy.
I understand. You know, that. Yeah.
That's how I try to walk through the world. Yes, I have issues. You know, we can talk about politics and that kind of thing. But because I learned that I can't worry about stuff I can't control. I can't control what Brother Putin is doing in Ukraine. I can't control what Brother Obama is doing or what Sister Clinton's going to be doing. But I can make a difference in my little neighborhood when I leave here tomorrow morning. And that's how the world changes, one person at a time. But we can get so caught up into what's going on over there, and then we get overwhelmed when we find out we're not responsible for that.
Sure.
We're responsible for ourselves. So I'd love to set up another time with you.
We'll do it. We'll talk again. Tell people very quickly, you've got about a minute and a half left here. Tell people where they can find your books and what you're doing next.
Okay. You can find my books on Amazon or Barnes & Noble's. Nook or Kindle, where you can get the paperback. Still trying to do some more conferences, working on a new book But it's not about UFOs or anything like that at all. It's a calendar. It's one lesson at a time. The working title is called God Consciousness, One Day at a Time. It's a lesson a day for 31 days.
Oh, nice.
Had nothing to do with UFOs. And that's where I'm at. Still, you know, just signed a contract with my church for another 2 years. So we'll see.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, fantastic. Michael, it's been great having you on. We've run right up to the end of the program.
The message is being very powerful.
Yeah, I would say so.
I thank you much. But I want to talk more. We can talk about my anti-racism work. We got plenty to talk about.
All right. That is fantastic, because I'd love to talk to you about that as well. Folks, you've been listening to Reverend Michael J.S. Carter, and you can find him online, and you can get his book and read up about this. Great conversation. Michael, thank you for being here.
Thank you, brother. Take care.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Take care. All right, John, it's just back to you and me. And
I didn't know
that was an
say.
Interesting conversation.
I was actually quite speechless by that. I had a preconceived idea, which was thrown out the window within the first minute.
Same here. Well,
it kind of hit me like a locomotive.
Same here. There was a lot of material there, and it was very well worth listening to. And now, you know what? We got to go. So, folks, thanks for listening to us. Join us on Thursday with Rocky Stucci, when he'll join us for the Situation Room at 3 p.m. Central Standard Time right here on the IPBN Alternative Talk Radio Network. And this is the end of the Intrepid Radio Show. We'll be back here next Sunday night. Say goodnight, John.
Good night, John.
Desolation comes upon the sky. Now I see fire inside the mountain. I see fire burning the trees. And I see fire hollow in soul. I see fire blood in the breeze. And I hope that you remember me. Should my people fold and surely I'll do the same. Confined in mountain holes, we got too close to